Hello everyone, my name is Kim. I'm from South Korea, 26 years old. I'm doing a PhD in Milan, and I'm also creating my own startup.
Thanks for agreeing to this interview and also in such a short notice. And the first question that I always ask everybody here is, how do you take your coffee?
How do I take my coffee? Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here with you, man. I usually go for Americano. I know that's almost a crime here in Italy, but I used to do fasting. You know, and when you fast, coffee is an appetite suppressant. So if you just have an espresso, it's too fast, and then you get hungry again. So I used to drink Americanos over, let's say, half an hour to 1 hour until it gets cold to delay my first meal.
So you basically were treating coffee kind of like tea, in a way?
In a way, yeah. Yeah. Basically as a way not to eat anything until, let's say, 2 p.m.
And how do you find yourself now that you've moved recently to Italy? Has something changed? Because I know Americanos here are different than in other places. They give you an espresso shot with water on the side,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, that confused me a bit. But, you know, I'm not a coffee connoisseur, let's say. You know, I like espresso sometimes. Sometimes when it's cold and you want something more substantial, I take a cappuccino or a latte. So, you know, I just go with whatever.
So you're more flexible.
I'm very flexible when it comes to coffee. I have a lot of friends who are like really anal about their coffee. You know, like this is not the Neapolitan style. The cup has to be, the espresso cup has to be warmed up before, this kind of stuff.
So what was it that brought you to Italy in the first place? I guess it was your PhD.
Yeah. So I grew up in Korea till I was 10. And then I went to the rest of my education was in England, from end of primary school, secondary school, university. Then I did a master's that is called Four Cities. So it's an urban studies program that moves around four different cities in Europe: Brussels, Vienna, Copenhagen, and Madrid. And after that, I had the choice of, okay, so are you going to, because I'm Korean, Koreans have to do the military service for 2 years. So it was a question of, do I want to do that now, or do I want to pursue, let's say, a life and a career in Europe a bit more, and then go? So that got me looking into a PhD, and my girlfriend is Italian, so made a lot of sense to come to Milan.
So you're delaying the military service?
In a way, yeah.
At some point you were going to have to go back and do the military service.
Yeah.
It's delayed. There's no way to basically get out of it.
Avoid it. There are some ways, but, you know, for instance, you could get citizenship in another country or permanent residency in another country that would allow you to either not go, because I'm not a Korean citizen anymore, or delay it until you're ineligible.
Because of age,
because
for example,
of age, yes.
Or health.
Yeah, 38. I think 38 is the age. But most cases, yeah, it's pretty unavoidable. I mean, if you imagine 50 million Koreans, let's say 25 million male Koreans, you know, everyone has either done it or is trying to get out of it. And the people that run that institution, they know every trick in the book. You know, they don't just let you get out of it easily or pay your way out, as I know some countries allow you to do. You know, that's not really a thing. Unless, I guess, if you're a son of a politician or something, they sometimes find a way to sneak out.
Yeah, that happens. Here, I think they canceled it maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Where I'm from, there's a lottery, so you can either do it or get out scot-free. Depends. But it's not as hard. Yeah, because there you do it every Saturday for a year. So it's not
that bad. Yeah,
it's not that bad.
But that's crazy. Like, you just have a dose of bad luck and you suddenly have to give up your Saturdays for a whole year. Like,
yeah.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. People get out with all kinds of weird shit. But let's say fortunately and slightly unfortunately, I'm fucking healthy. So I don't have a way out. Not that I know of. But what they are doing is with, you know, with Trump and the meeting between North Korea, South Korea and the US, relations are improving, let's say even just on the surface. And they're talking about signing a peace treaty. And recently, South Korea passed a legislation reducing the duration from 21 to 18 months, so a year and a half. That's good. So you don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 years. But
so there's still a big push for reunification at some point.
I mean, that's too far ahead. Right now, it's just about signing a peace treaty, because we haven't even got a treaty that says the war has ended. Like, technically, the war is still on. Since 50 to 53 was the Korean War, and then there was a pause button. Okay, let's draw a line, let's calm down. And until now, so we haven't actually officially ended the war with the terms and the agreements. So that's clearly, I think, the first step. And then with denuclearization and stuff like that, in the next decades, definitely the whole unification thing will come up, but that's a big thing.
So you grew up in a place that had this very peculiar, let's say, urban situation. The separation of a country in halves, and I guess people grow with a different sense of what a country is or what's missing, something lacking perhaps. And I think since then South Korea has become one of the most technologically advanced nations.
Yeah.
They were very proud of having the fastest internet, of having companies like Samsung and others pushing technology to different levels that maybe in Europe they haven't achieved even yet. Like 4G came here like quite late.
Yeah.
What was the reason that you decided to get involved in architecture, in urban planning, in city design?
Yeah, there's a long story to that, you know. So what's really funny is that I grew up in a neighborhood in Seoul, right? That was part of a movement that was called, in Korean, it's Maul, which means village. So the movement was kind of, let's create an urban village. That's to say, in mega cities, in many cities, in fact, nowadays, there's not really that community neighborhood feeling of knowing your neighbors, you know, spending time with them on the street, that is, let's say, more characteristic of a rural village. So a bunch of parents came together, of which my parents were one of the founding members. They said, let's create a community of parents that start looking after each other's kids, right? And then they said, okay, well, the Korean education system is also not very holistic. So let's try and get a preschool education institution where we can send our kids and trust them to, you know, play and have fun. So in a way, it was kind of an alternative urban neighborhood movement that I was part of as like the first guinea pig growing up since like 2, 3. And then I went to England to study. And for my bachelor's, I did philosophy, politics and economics. You know, and I was really into philosophy and the degree was amazing. Like, it just gave me so many tools to think about lots of shit that's going on. Having said that, it was very abstract, you know? These ideas, you know, morality, ethics, and perception, knowledge, reality, it's very, very abstract.
Very theoretical.
Very theoretical. And it was when I came across urban studies, I was doing a year abroad in Paris, and I had a class on the right to the city and radical democracy. And it was basically how all these philosophical, political, economic things that I'd been learning It was about how these forces are shaping space, and more precisely, urban space, how space is not neutral, but produced by these forces. So for me, it was kind of like all this theory, let's actually see how it's concretely manifested in the city that we live in. So that was like the drive to apply the things that I was learning. And yeah, it's kind of funny that I came full circle, because a lot of the stuff that's being taught in the urban field is about neighborhood movements, grassroots movements, sustainable, you know, neighborhood groups and this kind of stuff. So in a way, I've come full circle. Like, I started there, I left and took this very traditional British education, and then somehow I landed, in a way, studying about the things that I came from.
Do you think it's different, though, when someone tries to implement some of this by their own will in comparison to a place like Detroit, where they do it out of necessity, basically?
What do you mean? What do you mean when someone does it out of their own will?
Because it's a similar theory in the end, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's take a step back, let's take care of our own, let's...
Yeah.
In a place where economical growth and social benefits and everything, let's say, is quite abundant, to a place like Detroit.
Well, I definitely think that a lot of spaces, a lot of cities are becoming obsolete, right? What they used to be known for is becoming not crucial anymore. Like you said, Detroit with the car industry, right? And that's actually one of the key concepts that's explored in urban studies, is the idea of a spatial fix, that capitalism and the way that we organize cities now, it needs a certain space for the capital to go. So the capital went into Detroit for the automobile industry, but then it needed to find another place because it accumulates, it overflows, and it's not as profitable anymore. So they go into, I don't know, the financial industry, and then they go into London. And as these capital moves out, a city like Detroit just becomes like, what do we do now? We've lost all our jobs. I see this in Bicocca, where I go to university. It used to be like an industrial hub, I think, but now with things moving out, it's just large empty spaces, this kind of stuff. But in terms of the grassroots movements, I mean, I think a lot of that arises from people that are losing touch with, basically dissatisfied with this neoliberal urban way of living, which is very much based on generating profit, which very much based on no intimate face-to-face social connections. Very fast-paced, very distanced, right? So whether it's and the idea of like ethical living and sustainability with the environmental movement. So there, I think a lot of these movements are coming from that angle of either finding that close connection that they crave, you know, not just digitally, but like meeting, and also trying to find a model of sustainable economic living, right? Whether it's permaculture and farming or other ways of living.
So you think this aspect is not only technology that is connecting us, but also separating us in a way? Is also just like our urban spaces are generating these kind of situations as well in the individual?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you think about, I mean, the way I thought of it, it's one of those things that when you think about it, it's so obvious, but it's also very easy not to think about it. I'm talking about like space, how space molds us and how space basically affects us to behave, right? And because it's like air, you don't actually think that space is making you move a certain way. Space is making you act a certain way, see a certain way. And yeah, I mean, I definitely think that in many ways, the way that cities have developed and how spaces are organized, they, instead of allowing people to make meaningful connections, social connections, face-to-face, talking, really get to know the other and care for the other. It's more about how can we organize individuals in a structure that maximize efficiency and profit and speed of execution. But these are, you know, I mean, we're talking very broadly, to be honest.
Of course, on the basis of that, this maybe might be like perhaps related to why you started your new startup about connecting people and trading skills and generating perhaps also income.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about what the startup's about?
Yeah, sure. So the idea is basically to create a community of people that want to meet, learn, and grow together. So like we said, in modern society, oftentimes people are distanced from each other. People usually connect through social media or through email, whatever. And I mean, I think that's great. I think social media is an amazing thing in many ways. But at the same time, a lot of people crave that human connection, that face-to-face connection. So the startup is a way in which the idea is that it allows people with various skills to meet, right? So that they can share their skills and grow together. And I think that's really important because today's society is moving so fast. It's very important to be learning new skills, developing yourself. And the way that happens nowadays is mostly through video platforms, video courses like YouTube, Coursera, Udemy. And the problem with video is that it's not personalized to where you're at in your level, right? Usually videos are targeted at least 100 people, let's say, and they're all at different levels. So how are you really gonna help that person learn a particular skill if you are not aware of that person's particular problem?
So the democratization of information has made us lose sight of each individual's background.
Yeah, I mean, because the model is that if I can sell one video course, I make 2 hours making the video, and if I can sell 100 people, that's more profit. I mean, it's just maths, right? But if you actually think about effectively helping a person, you know, whether it's Spanish or drawing or vocal coaching, whatever, you have to actually see where they are stuck, right? That's what you were saying about when you would teach photography. It's about that personalized coaching.
And perhaps it's also this lack of personalization that has also gotten people interested in finding solutions like the one you're trying to bring out.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I think, you know, nowadays a lot of talk is about AI is gonna take over the world, you know? Like robots are gonna take away all the retail jobs, robots are gonna start doing everything. And I definitely think there's a lot of credibility to this kind of thing. Like the AI is gonna take over a lot of things that we do. But I still believe that innately as human beings, you crave that connection to meet someone, to talk to them face to face, to feel and share emotions, you know? And certain skills will never go out of business because of robots, I believe, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
So you're trying to use technology in a way that is not just a whole package, but an introduction.
Yeah.
An easy way for us to say, okay, let's meet, let's talk, let's learn, let's do something.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's very, very naive to deny technology or to start, you know, always criticize social media, Facebook, Google, they're evil, Apple, you know, don't use smartphones. I think that's stupid. You know, I think the world is changing. You have to adapt. You have to understand that that's where the world is at right now. But at the same time, I'm trying to use that to, and also realizing the fact that human beings like to be around other human beings, not just through screen, right? So it's about using that kind of catchy technology in order to create some value in the world. You know, when two people meet and they can share skills and they can learn from each other, that's a deep connection you can build, right? not like, I don't know, just random, you know, Tinder or Grindr. You know, I think, you know, they're really cool apps, but you meet and sometimes you don't build that strong connection based on your interests, based on where you both want to go and grow, you know, the direction you want to grow in. So, yeah, I think I really believe in facilitating people with various skills to meet together so that they can exchange their skills or to pay each other so that they can learn and share.
And talking about screens, because I do, for example, watch a lot of cooking shows.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a fan of cooking. I want to learn. I like to learn. I'm not the best, but I find it fun and I enjoy it. And it's something I can watch on a screen and pick things out. Some things I didn't know, some things I didn't consider before. Mm. But in Korea, there's this funny thing, right, about people mokbang. Yearn for connection.
Yeah. Mokbang, yeah.
People who watch other people eat.
Yeah.
Do not eat alone.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I heard something like a lot of people actually are because of their lifestyle, find themselves eating alone, and they really don't like that, because that's a clear example. People want to eat with other people. People, especially when you eat and you cook something nice, you want to share it.
It's a very social experience.
Yeah, so they go on YouTube and there's this guy who's got a full table of Korean ramen and barbecues and God damn, it's amazing food that's on their table. And yeah, they like to chat and share that experience, yeah. You know, I think that's very interesting. It's interesting social phenomenon, but what that shows to me is that is one solution, the social media. But essentially, where is that coming from? Why is that so popular? Because people are alone and they want company, okay? And a screen company maybe is as good. But if you can really meet people, right, not just randomers, but people that can help you grow, people that have skills that you want to learn from, people that you can give value to and connect with, and you meet them in person, then I believe that's more satisfying than meeting someone on the screen, you know, because you can't really, like even mukbang, right, they have like, let's say 100,000 people text messaging the guy on the other end, you know.
But there's really no way for him to read.
He replies to like one or two, you know, he just says his shit. It's more passive, it's less interactive, I would say, but it still fills the void that a lot of people have, you know, that semblance of being with someone. And yeah, definitely I think that's a symptom of modern society where social media gives you this idea that you're permanently and always connected, but at the same time, deep inside, you know it's not a real connection, you know? So people seek that out. And if you can facilitate that in a city where people meet, because they're in the same space, and on top of that, they can share value, and on top of that, they can grow together. I think that's a good this community to have in the world. The problem is about executing it. I can't remember who exactly said it, but they say everyone that you know and love, let's say, was once a stranger. Besides maybe your mother and father and brother, everyone you've ever met that you love, your best friend was once a stranger. Another way to put it is a stranger has everything that you want and everything that you need. Money, fame, cars, broccoli, drawing skills, hairstyle skills, whatever the fuck you want, some stranger in the world has it, right? But we are taught growing up, like, avoid strangers, they're dangerous, don't talk to strangers, don't stand out, because they might kidnap you, they might kill you, they might be pedophiles, like, all this stuff. And so, yeah, it's kind of blocked that networking that is so essential to like human flourishing, I think. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely think facilitating them to meet and grow is a great thing. The coding thing, I think, yeah, it's great, but it's like they say a lot, like whatever the economic system requires, the education system kind of just produces, right? Right. So you need a lot of engineers, and then it's just like engineer, because that's where the money is. And I think there's a lot of value in teaching kids communication, or like meditation, or like emotional control, you know, or like, yeah, this kind of stuff. This kind of like woo-hoo, flimsy shit that the tech guys don't value, but like, I think that's crucial, like communication.
I don't think that's true entirely.
Yeah.
Have you heard about Kevin Rose? One of his projects is actually a meditation app that he does for free.
Cool.
Because he thinks that it's a necessity now sometimes.
Yeah, it's crucial. It's crucial. I also think that meditation, the idea of like appreciating what you have, gratitude and being present in the moment, these are all crucial things. But also another side is emotional control. You know, it's something that I also need to work on a lot, but it's basically becoming aware of your emotions and being able to control it, right? A good way to think about it is a boxer. You know, I just started boxing. A boxer, even the best, when they step into the ring, they feel fear. There's no fighter that doesn't feel fear in the 100th fight, you know? As the same fear that he felt in the first fight, he still feels that anxiety, that butterfly, right? That emotion. And unless he's a fucking psychopath, right? And it's not about the fear, it's about how you actually react when that fear comes, how you deal with that.
So, utilizing the right fuel.
Mm. Yeah, and using that as...
In a positive way,
yeah. And I think most people, and to a large extent myself, you know, people nowadays don't have that skill as much, because we're raised in such a like a silver spoon kind of way, you know? So you're not really required to handle difficult emotional situations as much. You know, I don't want to say people don't go through difficult shit, because a lot of people do, but yeah. I mean, in Sparta, for instance, 7-year-old boys were ripped away from their mother to go in a jungle to survive without food and fight and blah, 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 right? And then you'd have a lion man come and cut your foreskin, you know? I mean, it's crazy. The human rights activists would rage, like, and the mother certainly does not want that for her child. She loves her child. Now, I'm not saying that's good by any means. I'm not saying we should do that at all. But when that kid comes back to his mother and his family and his sister and his brother, you know, how does he relate to his mother? Does he relate in a way that's like, mama, can I get that next toy? Or is he like, okay, like,
I'm gonna help,
I'm gonna take care of you, you know? And I, you know, let's make it gender neutral now, because now, I mean, it could be a woman, it could be a man, whoever, but this idea of like taking responsibility, this idea of actually growing the fuck up. I think a lot of that is maybe lacking in today's society. And I definitely am not just diagnosing or blaming people. Like, this is a problem that I apply to myself and think of ways in which I can improve in that field as well.
So taking a step back, since we were talking about food before.
Mm. Oh yeah.
And Italy is...
Oh yeah.
It's food. Cultural.
Yeah.
Wine, pasta.
Yeah, man.
How do you find yourself here?
I mean, in the realm of food, I'm very, very happy. Like pasta, I love pasta. My favorite pasta is spaghetti. So, you know, I love making carbonara, puttanesca, spaghetti alle vongole, broccoli, salsicce, sardines, pasta, you know, all kinds I fucking love. Seafood pasta, especially. And yeah, what's there to say about food? Who doesn't love Italian food, right? You know, they definitely have a very strong tradition about what to do and not to do when it comes to food that I feel is even stronger than other countries. But I guess that comes with their like history and national pride, right? I'm of the opinion if it's delicious, fuck it, do it.
Action Bronson.
Yeah. But I think it's also important to like follow the tradition a bit to understand what the real thing is. And then you can add your creativity. Yeah.
What would be one thing that you could recommend? One Korean dish that people here in Italy or in other places that perhaps just have heard of, let's say Korean barbecue. Something else, something a bit more special. Not traditional, but...
Special. Well, first of all, Korean barbecue is amazing, so that's the thing. For the vegetarians, I would say all meat eaters, bibimbap. It's traditional. It's what they would give you if you went on a Korean Airlines flight. But if you get the real thing with the crispy rice at the bottom, like the sokkarat in a paella, the bit that sticks. And yeah, it's all kinds of different Korean vegetables with rice and sesame oil and egg. Fuck. It's great. That's great. Another thing that is traditional, but also just is my favorite, is kimchi jjigae, which is like a hot pot made out of kimchi. And it's got meat in it. It can have all kinds of different shit. You can do it even without meat. And it's like this red, spicy, tajine-like hot pot soup. Oh, God. So good. So good. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, and thank you for the conversation and everything. And it's a lucky situation that we find ourselves in the architectural department of the Polytechnico di Milano, which yeah. I guess it's a good setting for a conversation like this.
Yeah. My pleasure, man. It's great. It's fun.
And hopefully we can have you again some other time.
I'd love to, yeah. Anytime.